All right. This is Curtis Brown. I'm on the call with Kelly Kerr and team. So, Kelly, do we have anybody else on? Is Bridget or Audra on with us this morning?
Yeah, Audra's on, and I think Bridget is either on or will be on shortly. So.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. As we start these calls, we always kind of start with your agenda first, anything that's on your mind that you've been thinking about. And I just want to let you know that I did receive all of your materials this morning, and I read through a couple of your branded promotional pieces, and those look very, very good. So my compliments to you on those pieces. Very personalized and very, very focused.
Hey, Curtis?
Yes.
We're traveling to Houston, and we're in our car. We have you on our speaker.
Okay.
I don't know if it's technical difficulties with the phone or what, but I'm having a little bit of difficulty hearing you.
Okay. All right.
I've got my volume turned up as loud as it can go.
Okay. Let me make sure mine is turned up as loud as it can go. Hold on. Yeah, I've got my volume turned up as loud as it can go. You know, are you still having difficulty speaking with me or hearing me? I've got the mic right on my mouth.
Yeah, I'm going to move the phone between Audra and me. That might help some. I'm also going
to
switch it on the line, okay?
Okay.
So I know she knows that we're... Well, I can email.
Yeah. I hear you breaking up just a tad bit.
Okay.
Just let me know when you're ready.
We'll do. Yeah, I just sent her an email.
Okay. For Bridget, you want me to call Bridget for you? I've got another line.
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Yeah. What's her number?
210.
210.
205-1177.
1177. And was that 805?
It's 210-805-1177.
Okay. Hang on.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, Bridget, this is Curtis. How are you? I've got Kelly and Audra on the other line. Are you going to be able to dial in this morning?
I am. I totally forgot, and I was in this email on a call, and then I was like, oh, my gosh.
Okay. Do you have all of the dial-in instructions, or do you want me to repeat them real quick to you?
No, I think they're on my computer. I can dial in.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I've got them on the line, so go ahead and dial in. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay. So Bridget had a couple of operational things, and she's going to dial in right now.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. So, you know, as I was saying, what I wanted to try to do is start with your agenda first, anything that's on your mind, and then we'll kind of, you know, go back, do just a very thumbnail review and get into today's materials.
Sorry, guys.
Hello, Bridget.
No.
Okay. We're hearing you very clearly, and Kelly's in his car along with Audra. So we're starting with the agenda just to, with your agenda, just to get an idea of any of the questions or concerns that associated with the materials from last week. So, Kelly, did you want to start, or Audra or Bridget? Anybody got anything on their mind from the last call?
This is Kelly. Yeah, I basically sat down with Bridget, and we got the metrics for the average assets under management to target assets.
Right.
The revenue average and the target revenue, and you know, I forwarded that info over to you. And then, as well as you mentioned earlier, we sent the marketing pieces that we've all been working on together as well. And,
yeah, very attractive.
You know, as far as the material from last week, the feedback from everyone's been positive. We haven't had any negative feedback. It's all been very encouraging. So.
Okay. And, you know, also, if there's anything that needs to be further clarified, we're happy to do that as well.
What's that?
Anything that needs to be, you know, repeated or reviewed, you know, I'm also, you know, can do that as well.
Okay. We're still having trouble hearing you, Curtis. I don't know if Bridget can hear you, but
I can hear him perfectly.
Really? I don't know what the deal is.
And I'm hearing Bridget perfectly as well. Mm-hmm.
Ambient noise. Well, I can't stop the car because I got to get to this appointment. So
yeah,
we'll get through it.
Okay, so we'll kind of get through this. So by way of just a review, and I'll speak a little louder, and I hope I don't drown you out there, Bridget. I'll speak a little louder. So just by way of a very brief review, we talked about the minimum service level, and that you have to really be able to articulate the concept of 12-4-2. You know, 12 contacts a year, with 4 of them being reviews and 2 of them being in-person reviews. The others are phone reviews. Having a financial plan, 1 hour response to problems with a 24-hour resolution. And intergenerational planning falls under the planning component. So you want to have just a spiel that's where you're able to speak to your service model, and it's what you provide your clients. We talked about getting down to the core. There was an intro to segmentation. We talked about the screens. And then we talked about the minimum and the max. That the absolute minimum was the real average of your practice, and you sent me information on that. We talked about your target minimums, you know, what you're going to go out and target, which was the average of your top 20% of your book. So between your absolute minimum, which is your average, which that is at $1,160,000 right now, and your target is at 3.5. Now that doesn't mean that you can take clients that are below that target, of course, but you don't want to dilute the average below 1.1 million, okay, or 1.2. So now firmly implanted in your mind, your practice takes on relationships that have at least $1.2 million. But you're targeting relationships that have 3.5. Now, I think because of the size of the number of your accounts that you have, that target is a little skewed on the high side. it's more than 50% of your average. So I don't want you to psych yourself out on that target being too high. And so you might want to, you know, lower it a little bit, okay? Because you're only
Let me comment.
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
I'm concerned about being an issue, and if you read down into the text of my email, we only base that on 11 households, which is really only about 12% of the total number of relationships. If we were eight more in there, that number would come down, and I think it would come down to roughly around about 2.5. It would probably lower the target from 3.5 to roughly 2.5 approximately.
Exactly.
I don't
exactly.
know if that helps, but, you know, these were kind of rough numbers, and so I was a little unsure about whether that was 20% of the total book or 20% or the top 20% of the A client.
Yeah. Yeah, your top 20% is skewed a little bit, so we've got to make a little bit of an adjustment in those numbers. And I think if you went to 2.5, that would be an appropriate target.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay. All right. So henceforth, and we'll imprint this target so that everybody knows, and when we're get into client acquisition, and we start to communicate what our the relationships that we'd like to have or be introduced to, we're looking at relationships that have $2.5 million or more. And I think with the retirement plans, you might want to adjust that, although there are retirement plans out there with those kinds of numbers. So, but you need to firmly, come to grips with what do you think that target should be. If it's 4.1, I mean, I can go for that. But that's probably also somewhere in the neighborhood of, probably 3.5 million, 3 million, something like that. So, how do you feel about that, Kelly, in terms of, rethinking the number on the retirement plan?
I have a different thought on the retirement plan. I mean, if anything, I'd probably go up some, not down.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The only reason I say that is because I think that based on some of the recent conversations that we've had with some of our strategic partners, particularly as it relates not to so much the traditional 401k, but to defined benefit plans,
right,
that those numbers and those types of plans are just bigger AUM type relationships. They tend to be, a small defined benefit plan is considered like $5 to $10 million. That's considered a small one. And so I would almost say that there needs to be a stratification within the retirement plans to where the 3.5 that you mentioned, I think is fine for a traditional K plan.
Right.
Or a DB plan, I think we would want to be looking at a higher number. And so I think we add a third column that just says, once the first column says 401k or defined contribution retirement plan, and maybe a third column perhaps that says defined benefit retirement plan, because they just typically tend to be bigger accounts.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a number that you're going to work with, and maybe you know, try to have that number kind of resolved, you know, by next week. So I see what you're saying. There's a number of, you know, publications that you're probably familiar with that really speak to the assets in some of these plans. For example, I'm just looking at one online right now which says that retirement plans grew 8.5% to $9 trillion on September 30th. It's the Pension and Investments Annual Survey, and that defined contribution plans in the top 1,000, you know, are up to $3 trillion. So, I mean, I think you can find some statistics among small business owners to really get, you know, an idea of what those assets are and start to really think about your target. So, you know, I'm actually going to try to, you know, I did some work on this and had some research from the ICI, Investment Company Institute. So let me also look at that, and I'm sure that you're probably, it's what you do all the time, so you're familiar with all the trade journals and information more so than I am. Okay, so we're gonna look at that number, and so far really good. Now the next thing that we did speak of, we talked about butlers, which are the children of your top 20. They get the 401 service, and we've talked about how to introduce that service model to your clients. And everybody on the team needs to kind of practice how to deliver your new service model so that you feel comfortable with it. Okay. Now, in this particular, any questions on what we covered in our last session?
No.
Okay.
I don't have any. I don't know about Audra and Bridget, but I don't have any.
Okay.
I don't either.
Okay. So now, in this week, we talk a little more about the Supernova standard. I won't go through that again because I've already done it this morning. And you really, in terms of account reassignments, your book is pretty much where it needs to be. I think you mentioned a few exceptions. So not much work to do there. And so I think that you need to be prepared for any reactions because this is something that's going to be an ongoing process in years ahead as this business continues, you know, to have the kind of explosive growth that I know it will have. So, you know, one of the things is you're going to start off your conversations, you know, with what we offer is, and you know, when you're talking about your service model, and you may get a response, you know, well, you're going to say, well, how does that sound? They're going to say, well, if you actually do it. And some, you know, we've got responses, well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm not going to take my $5 million account elsewhere. So, what happens often is when this is repeated to clients, they will bring in additional assets. So I want you to think about your service model, how to communicate it. So what you're doing is you're putting this wall of competence around your best clients, and they may transfer other accounts, other assets. And there's this rule of reciprocity that I want you to understand, because as you start delivering on your service model, you know, clients are going to be enamored and they're going to feel that they need to be providing you with something of equal value. So, for example, if you took somebody out to dinner, they would typically respond, next time, you know, let me take you out. Or if it's a golf invitation, you know, next time, let's do it at my club. And that's the rule of reciprocity that people understand and realize. And so when you are doing good things for people, that is what happens, okay? So let's jump to centers of influence. All right. Remember, every client is going to receive a folder. Every prospect is going to receive a folder. And Bridget, you're in charge of the folders and what goes inside them, okay?
Okay.
And so you're the VP of brand, and when, for example, there are, let's say Kelly's got three calls scheduled, you are sending out those notices ahead of time so that there's no missed calls or back and forth, and he knows what the agendas are. Any executive summaries are also placed in the folders. So the centers of influence, they get a folder. You're going to meet with them once per month, okay? Now, there may be somebody who's part of a legal association in town. There might be a small business association in town. I remember living in St. Petersburg, Florida, and I was on the chamber board, and I was on a business organization called St. Pete Progress, and I was on another one, and this was designed to attract business to the downtown community. And it put me in front of lots of people, okay? And I brought in, as a manager, I brought in new relationships into the office. So a center of influence would be somebody like me who gets in front of lots of people who can bring new relationships to you. They like working with you, and they get a folder. You're going to keep them updated in terms of your business, in terms of the markets, executive summaries, and you're going to treat them just like a client, and they may or may not be doing business with you, okay? But they are people who like you, like what you're doing, and how you're taking care of people, okay? And you're going to present them the service model, how you work. You're going to have back notes. There are going to be questions. In other words, you're going to bring that center of influence along in your relationship. And off the top of your head, can you think of someone that might be an attractive center of influence? Just give me one example if you have one.
Sure. We have a relationship with a center of influence in San Antonio that's is a general line insurance agency. So he's doing property casualty insurance, group health care insurance, and
okay.
and a payroll company. And I think their annual revenues are pretty stout. They're about $17-18 million a year in
okay.
annual revenue. So that's one center of influence. There's others, but that's one that comes to mind.
Okay. Now, you have to give the key center a folder, and you would invite this person to meet your team. You would explain your service model to them, and maybe it's over lunch or whatever, but you're talking about the type of clients that are really fun for you to work with that they have a type of assets, they are involved in these kinds of activities. So you're educating that center of influence, and he gets a folder. By the same token, you're going to ask the center of influence what they need from you, okay? You want to meet their staff. You want to bring your staff to meet their staff so that there's a solid working relationship there. And we talk more about that when we get into the client acquisition component, okay? But right now we're just trying to identify who they are first. Okay. Any questions on the centers of influence?
Not yet.
No.
And, okay. And, you know, I will say, since you're very involved in with lawyers, potentially structured settlements, there might be an association of attorneys that specialize in civil wrongs, torts, what have you. And to the extent that you get a key person or a member of the association as a center of influence, that's kind of a person that you'd want to get as well. Okay. Now remember, as you, and we're moving kind of into some of these niche markets, remember, as you move into these things, you're going to be looking at and getting familiar with all kinds of trade journals in this area. When there's government changes, there's an article that makes sense, you're going to be sending it to your center of influence, okay? Now, segmentation, you know, as you really begin to kind of dig a little differently in your book and you apply the screens to your clients, the issue is, okay, what did you uncover? You know, what kind of potential do these folks have? You know, how did you acquire them? And so what you're doing now is you're identifying your ideal clients and you're looking at your niche. So let me ask you the first question. When it comes to many of these retirement plans, how did you acquire those clients?
We called them.
Okay. So you just picked up the phone and you made a cold call, right? No personal introduction? By somebody else, a CPA influence or anyone like that?
Maybe on one or two, but I would say of the, you know, I'm looking here.
I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just, you know.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's just it's kind of where we've come from, I guess. We've got 24 plans, and it looks like I can remember maybe two out of the 24 being an intro from someone. Three out of the 24 being an intro from someone. There's a few more. Four out of the.
Okay.
It's like about four out of the 24, so maybe 20%. Were intros, and the other 80% were cold calls, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did any of these people work with pension consultants or pension design firms?
Oh, they all do. In fact, that's one of our target COIs would be some of the, they're called third-party administrators or pension consulting firms.
Right.
Yeah. No, we have some pretty strong, deep relationships with some of those types of firms. What we haven't particularly done well, in my opinion, is really have a targeted marketing initiative to those COIs. It's more of like, you know, we work together, we'll have an occasional meal, we might play golf together or something, but it's not – it's not a structured marketing initiative of any. There's no structure to it, I guess, is what I'm trying to
say. Okay. Don't worry about it. We're going to take care of that. So now, if you can kind of start to hear some things, is that you might start to create a mastermind group that has a highly recommended CPA, a pension consultant, an attorney involved in structured settlements, and yourself, which is kind of a small one. And, you know, that becomes like a nucleus to expand where everybody works for the support of each other. Okay, so we're not there yet, but we're starting to kind of uncover some potential here. So basically, when you're looking at some of these clients, you're looking at the commonality of what they share. You know, it's got to be a match. Are they centers of influence, so on and so forth? All right. So what you're trying to do here now is improve the client experience, so that you can drill down on some of these marketing strategies. And so as you were going through the client list, and right now it's not completely applicable, but for the future, I just want you to know what the drill down is. You know, it's somebody that you can explain your service model to, you can develop the client experience, and oftentimes, as you let go of clients, they're going to ask you, what will it take for me to stay? And whether you deal with this today or in the future, you need to really remember this because, you know, we obviously can't apply our model, Joe, to a wide strath of clients. And so we had to create a minimum level of assets that we could work with. Oh, you mean it's only about assets? Well, look, let me transfer in these accounts from Bank of America and Wells, and I also have a $500,000 annuity. So I can provide you with an extra $2 million because I really do like your service. Okay. So now they're staying, they're bringing in more assets. Now clients might say, who do you recommend if they can't meet your levels? And you only make the handoff to folks that you trust in the office that are willing to follow your model of service. Okay. And they may respond, look, are you too big for your britches now? And your response is, look, it's all about being able to provide the level of service that you deserve. Okay. So that's the whole piece in terms of letting go. All right. Niche markets. You've got some very clearly defined niche markets, which means you're ahead of the game in so many ways. Most folks are just like all over the place. And, you know, you've identified these attorneys, you've identified these retirement plans, but your natural niche is what you came into the business with, okay? And when you look back on your practice, these are the ones that you kind of cultivated. The target are similar to clients that you have. They meet your minimums. They may be a part of affinity groups, but they're people that you like to work with. And they have the ability to qualify as a client. Now, I think you identified business owners, which was, you know, the piece that you also sent. And you looked at attorneys. So, and retirement plans, are really your focus. And there's niches inside the retirement plan business as well. So that's pretty good. Are you looking to expand and add one more niche, or are you pretty satisfied with what you have right now?
You know, we're always looking for opportunity, Curtis. I think, you know, right now there's one niche that we had in our marketing plan that we sent over to you in the prior email to this week's email.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically nonprofits, specifically rural nonprofits that are hospitals.
Okay.
Many of these entities have rather large either defined benefit plans or 401k plans,
okay,
endowments that they are tied to in some cases. And so it kind of almost becomes a question of, well, is that within the retirement plan niche, or should you have its own separate niche for nonprofits and hospitals? But I think we're looking at that niche pretty closely, because I was in an hour and a half long conference call late yesterday afternoon with one of our really good providers, and
okay,
they seem to feel like that we have a footprint in some of these markets in South Texas that are underserved, mainly rural counties where we already have existing relationships, either clients or centers of influence or both. And they
right.
want to give us intel on some of those plans that are in the nonprofit space in those markets, so that we can in turn leverage our existing relationships to get introductions into those. So they're helping us put together some very targeted list of candidates to go after. But again,
okay,
I don't want to dominate the call here by talking too much. But yes, we are committed to those target markets that we've outlined. I will make one slight clarification here. On the attorney segment, not that we would back away from structured settlement business, but I think our primary focus initially there would be in working with attorneys that are getting lump sum settlements, because one of our pension consulting firms, in helping a client that's in the process of onboarding, identified a way to defer about $700,000 a year in injury awards. And so we feel like there's a real opportunity there. This is a
okay.
firm that's been in business for over 100 years, and they have thousands of these plans in place. It's one of those little niches within a niche. I don't know how to say
mm-hmm.
anyway, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I gotcha. I do it too. So, yeah.
Really, apparently explored all that much, but it can be easily done. And so we've got, you know, so again, I wouldn't back off of the structured settlement business. I've got some really good contacts locally with guys that are some of the biggest plaintiff's attorneys in the country. I mean, they do north of $200 million a year in settlement work, which I think is
wow.
substantial, doing predominantly defective tire cases, like blowout cases on tires and things like that, where they go after, mm-hmm. you know, the big automakers and things like
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah, product liability. Yeah.
I'm mm-hmm. using 4 or 5-year-old numbers where, you know, they were running about $225 million a year and revenue to them, so the settlements were probably close to $750 to $800 million a year
mm-hmm.
in actual settlements. So we have some contacts, and I'm not opposed to getting into the settlement market, but I think there's a lot of people that do structured settlements. There's not many people, if any, that are going directly to the attorneys themselves and saying, well, what about your portion of the award? What about, you know, deferring that and shielding it from taxes?
Exactly.
And we do have some issues circulating, too, with the tax laws changing. I mean, that's hitting every aspect of our industry, and some could argue, well, with tax rates coming down, that might not be as appealing, but taxes aren't going away. So we feel like
that might be a
good niche to explore.
Okay. So let's, to summarize, I think you're playing in the right sandbox, okay? So it's kind of the attorney and, you know, kind of relationships. It's the business owners and it's retirement plans. And I would put a banner on the nonprofit sector as well. So that is probably enough to maintain your core competencies around those key areas. Okay? And here's a tidbit. I don't know if you're familiar with a website, it's the Center for Nonprofit Management and the Alliance for Nonprofit Management. Both of those are areas to gain insight about what's on the minds of folks that manage nonprofits. So, you know, take a look at those and begin to start to study, learn, and get yourself up to speed if you're going to go after that market. Okay.
What was good. The second one? You said the first one was Center for Nonprofit Management. What was the other one?
The Alliance for Nonprofit Management.
Okay. Are those like trade associations or?
Yeah, they're trade associations, and what they do is they help those that work in that sector get better at what they do. And so there's lots of articles and training on a variety of subjects. Anything from, you know, managing HR to looking at creating and establishing your endowments to strategic planning. And so it's got all those interesting little tidbits, which means that from time to time you go in and, you know, as a courtesy, you just say, hey, Mary, I thought you might want to, you know, take a look at this article. Don't know if you've seen it or not, but it had a really interesting tone on, you know, nonprofit management, and I thought you might, you know, enjoy having it. So now you're being seen as a person who adds value to the relationship, not just, you know, coming in and just managing the assets and the money, but you're adding some additional value.
Okay. I think that's a great suggestion. Thanks.
Okay. And I only say that because I was on quite a few nonprofit boards over the years, including a hospital. So, I was on the fifth largest all children's hospital in the country. So, you know, they got lots of issues, lots of needs. Okay. Now, one of the things that you do as you begin to enter these niche markets is you're getting close to people. And one of the things that you might say with regards to nonprofits is, I'm thinking of adding another area to my practice around the nonprofit sector, particularly with hospitals and endowments. And you're asking your center of influence or your colleague, how would you go about it? What are your thoughts? Let's kind of meet for lunch, talk about it. Okay. So you're giving the entry and somebody's going to help educate you on the best approach to go after that niche market. And that would hold true for any niche that you're interested in developing. And you don't have to say, I'm thinking of building, but I am specializing in an area in terms of my practice, and I'm very interested in acquiring new relationships in that sector. And give me your advice on some of the things you think I should do. Okay. So that's the niche kind of piece. Okay. Branding.
Question.
Yeah, sure.
Quick question. Would you direct those questions strictly towards COIs or clients or both?
Well, you know, there's the old adage that says birds of a feather flock together, you know, which means the one board member or executive director, they go to conferences. They see people. In fact, the Center for Nonprofit Management, you know, had a conference on the East Coast. And so they know people. They can introduce you to people. They can make personal introductions by phone. They can do this stuff. So, yeah, I would definitely, you know, look at them both as clients. Remember, clients can be centers of influence as well. So you could treat one as a center of influence, and they get the folder, they get the contact, so on and so forth. And they also tend to have some affluent board members on their boards. So, you know, when you get one of those, you get the potential for endowment. I mean, look, just a little, the YMCA, well, they don't call it YMCA anymore. They call it the Y. In San Francisco, for example, had a $40 million endowment, 18 Ys. You would take that. You know, and we brought in people to speak on philanthropic giving and any number of subjects. So the number of these nonprofits that are out there, whether they be hospitals, private educational institutions, so on and so forth, you know, when you start getting deep into that website, it will open up an area of expertise for you. Okay. But I think that if you dealt with that, the business owners and the attorneys, that's enough to build some expertise around. Okay.
Steve, good question. Quick question. Do you think it's niches?
I think three is fine. Look, here's what I envision would probably happen, okay? If your business started to double or more, depending upon how huge you're going to get, you're going to eventually need probably another staff member.
Right.
You might have to pick up another junior FA. Or you're going to raise your minimums. You know, look, I can only take accounts that have at least $10 million. So you stay with fewer accounts with larger assets. But at any rate, we know that you can't apply the service model. No more than one person can work with more than about 85 relationships. So when you reach that fork in the road, a decision is going to have to be made.
That makes sense. I understand what you're saying. And I think we were a little bit concerned at one point that at least on this next iteration in our evolution of the business that maybe we were pursuing too many niches simultaneously, but you know, it's kind of like drilling for oil. Some of the deals are going to work out greater than you ever imagined, and some of them are going to be duds, and some of them are going to fall somewhere in between. So, I just it's helpful to get some insight from somebody that's been there to sort of say, yeah, you're not losing your mind by going after 3 inches at the same time. You know, that's a concern sometimes, is especially given that there's these advisors out there that only do retirement plans, for instance, and that's not something that I just intuitively want to do. I want the group to be more diverse than just a retirement plan group.
And some of the areas that you will touch on are going to be interrelated anyway. So it's not like you're going to have to know the nuances of each of your groups. But once you start with recommendations, they're not going to be too far away from each other in terms of a portfolio structure and things of that nature.
That's correct, and there are some crossovers even within our existing book where we have several of these niches in one client, for instance. So
right, exactly.
Yeah.
So definitely, and I think, look, you're smart enough. You can get up to speed in the nonprofit sector, you know, in terms of the nuances. And probably, I'm going to say a couple of months, really, by taking your time, spending an hour here and there, going through those websites. That's where all the information is. And it's kept up to date and current. Okay. Branding. What makes you unique? So the quality of your brand is based upon your worst clients. Which means there's no more A, B, C, and D, because if there were, the D clients are going to define kind of who you are. So, you know, you want to keep things at a high level. Everybody gets the same level of service in Supernova. And so you've got to teach the clients who you are. Planner, problem solver, your team. You serve them in an extraordinary way. So try not to leave out any of those steps. Everybody gets the equivalent of that medical folder. It's not high technology, but it's high touch. You give them the two-hole punch, and you give it to your clients and your centers of influence, and they're going to say, hey, you know, you thought of everything. And that gives them peace of mind. So we talked earlier also about introducing and teaching the model to your centers of influence. So as you are sitting down with the client, the one thing that you're trying to do is obviously you're trying to win people over, but you're also trying to teach them the model, okay? So you're going to give them that folder, and you should begin to start to list and target roughly about 6 centers of influence, okay? Now, it's generally 6 or 3 per person or team member. So if you come in and you are able to identify somewhere between, you know, 4 and 6, given where Audra is in the business, then I think that would be very good.
Okay.
So I'd like you to put that down as one of the things that you need to, you know, just kind of pencil in for next week and just send it to me and I just by first names, who your centers of influence are and what they do.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you should probably jump out in front and go through Cindy Bowie and now order the folders. Okay, so that you're ready for that. So your centers of influence are going to be CPAs. They're going to be professionals, attorneys. They could be realtors. You know, they could be business brokers, pension consultants. These are people who we're going to be training to send you referrals. Okay? In terms of natural niches, I'm not going to get into that too much because I don't really think it applies in your situation. But these would be people like family members, friends, people that maybe you went to college with that are in areas that can, you know, refer you, you know, to folks. So, you know, those would also fall into that category of potential centers of influence. So, to summarize, before the close, got your absolute minimums, number of relationships, your target minimums in terms of asset levels you're going after, know your target number of clients. I've defined the ideal client, the people that you want to work with. They don't cause you any grief, any stress. People you enjoy working with. Use your screens. Begin to start to discuss the service model with 20% of your clients. We've got your target niches for now defined. So, you know, in a year, 2 years, maybe it changes, but I think you've got great niche markets established here. Okay. Questions about anything that we've covered today or anything that's on your mind in general?
I'm going to let the other two go first.
Okay. Audra, Bridget?
This probably is not a
all questions are good questions.
When you're talking about ordering folders from Cindy Bowie, are you just
yes?
Well, who is that, and are that, these folders, or do we already have these folders?
No, you don't have the.
Have the folders.
Oh, you do. Oh, okay, good. Then that knocks out that step. Well done.
What we don't really have right now, Curtis, is like what we would like to have content-wise in the folders.
Okay.
I've been really, I guess for lack of a better term, very disorganized in that way, and I need to change that.
Okay.
But, yeah, we have the folders. In fact, we have, like, red folders for clients.
Mm-hmm.
When we went through the program, we had red folders for clients, which we still have. We had blue folders for what was considered the B book, which, I mean, honestly, those were more like 4-1 calls instead of 12-4-2, I guess. So
okay.
For the blues is kind of like your butlers and a few, maybe a dozen or so that are just smaller clients that are clients that we like, you know, that we don't necessarily want to part ways with anytime soon.
It's kind of like you get the pastor of your church and, you know, he doesn't meet your asset threshold. What are you going to do, kick him out? Of course not.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you got to, make a judgment call on some of these folks. You know, you want that guy on your side from a prayer point of view.
Yeah. We have the folder, and then we have green folders for prospects. I don't think we have like a certain color for COIs at present, but we have the physical folders, and they're labeled, and and Bridget put all that together some time ago. What's not occurring right now is, and this is not due to Bridget or Audra, it's completely in my court, is the organization, the contents of those folders coupled with reworking our schedule so that what I had envisioned was taking Tuesdays and Thursdays and making the call days for as many of the clients that would agree to Tuesdays and Thursdays, allowing us to use Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for marketing purposes. And so we have to get that schedule nailed down, and I'm running a little bit behind in getting that done, but that's
well, we haven't covered that really in our in our training manual at this point. So we'll be getting to it. this was just a heads up to be prepared. And, you know, if there's some high school student that can, or college student that can come in, get a little exposure to help with those folders, I would do that. And we'll get to the content of what goes inside later. So I would say when we come to what goes inside the folders, then get somebody to do that. I'm a big believer that the things that you really shouldn't do or don't like doing, see if you can find somebody else to do those things. so that you use your time more wisely. I call you, you know, you're the guy who's going to be out there trying to ring the cash register. So, you know, you can find somebody else to do that. Now, the person that's going to really be in, the person that's going to be in charge of that is going to be Bridget.
Yeah.
So, Bridget, you know, you would have an intern, and you would direct them. These are how I want my folders. This is what I want inside. And then come back to me at the end of the day on how many you've got done. So
I think I'm the
intern. That's the way to do that. You think you're the intern?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think that's me too. And that's okay, because we've already got those folders done. So
okay,
I thought
so
you were talking
done.
About some other type of folder that I wasn't
aware of.
That had to be specially ordered, and so then I got worried because I was like, wait a second, there's another set of folders.
Okay, well, look, you're anointed then. Congratulations. That's one step that doesn't need to be covered. That's good. That's great.
I expect my gold medal in the mail.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Totally
smokes. I like that attitude. That's great. Okay. Any other questions before we close?
I don't think so.
All right.
I don't have any, Curtis. I think we're in good shape.
Okay. Well, look, I've enjoyed speaking with you. Keep these calls interactive, and I look forward to speaking with you. Next week. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
We'll speak then, and you all have a great rest of your week.
You too. Thank you.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You too.